Okay. Well, first I'd like to thank all of you tonight for taking the time to help celebrate the careers of two tremendous men and two tremendous Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles Hall of Fame recognizes some of the greatest individuals who have made an impact not only on our franchise, but on the city of Philadelphia and on our fans. Leo Carlin, Troy Vincent, they are the models for a Hall of Fame when you think about each of them individually. First, I'll talk a little bit about Leo. Leo Carlin, those who know him, this man is the epitome of loyalty. 53 years and counting with one organization. I don't care if that's sports or any business. That's incredible. But you might think that I'm referring to the loyalty to the team and the organization, the players, the employees, the coaches. That almost goes without saying. What makes Leo truly special is something very different than that and much deeper, which is an incredible loyalty to every fan that ever passed through the gates of Lincoln Financial Field, Veterans Stadium, or Franklin Field. I have to tell you, as an owner, to have somebody like Leo be able to reach out to every single fan is something very special, because it represents the organization in a way that's just, I don't think any other franchise could possibly have that. It takes an effort and a dedication that's just well over and above the job description, and that's what Leo's been all about. You all need, a lot of you know Leo as well as we do, and you know, he's got a witty and great personality, amazing energy, never ends, always thinking of others, and a thirst to, if you haven't been around his stories, he will find a way to make you laugh at all times. But I think, at least for my behalf, and I think the Eagles organization's behalf, what I'd love everybody to take home tonight is a recognition of the reason Leo is in the Eagles Hall of Fame, is being inducted, is the pride and dedication he takes towards every single ticket holder of the Philadelphia Eagles. He's so selfless and dedicated in this regard, and it serves generation after generation after generation of fans and their game day experience. And that's what this is all about. You know, we can talk about television and all that, but to have somebody who is dedicated to each and every ticket holder is spectacular. So, Leo, congratulations on your amazing and wonderful career, and it's still going. You bleed Eagles green. You are a legend in the Philadelphia sports community, and we all thank you for everything you've done for the Eagles and especially for your big heart. Now let me introduce Troy Vincent. When I think of Troy, I mean, we talk a lot about trying to build a team of high character and the like. Troy Vincent epitomizes the concept of high character. Whether it's on the field, in the locker room, his post-football career that's been incredibly successful, he always carries himself with class. When we inquired Troy from the Miami Dolphins in 1996, I felt pretty certain we were getting a top-notch cornerback, and I think we were absolutely true on that. But what I had no idea of was, or no real appreciation of, was we were getting an incredible leader, somebody that was dedicated to his teammates, a man of remarkable integrity, and a pillar in his hometown community of Trenton and later in the city of Philadelphia. You know, we remember Troy as a lockdown cornerback who earned 5 Pro Bowl appearances in his 8 years in Philadelphia. He earned the trust of all players, coaches, employees, staff, and especially our fans. And that respect was reciprocated. But I think that what really makes Troy stand out was, I can't tell you the times for me that I would walk into either the locker room or be at practice after a long, hard practice session, who's standing on the sideline but Troy mentoring the younger players. It doesn't show up in the stat sheet. doesn't show up in a biography of Troy Vincent, but it is unique, it's rare, and I think his lasting impression on our organization and our team is going to be just that. We know how great a player he was, but that model of sharing what you have, the ups and downs of football are so tough for young players, and Troy understood that, and he was just a model at helping. So for both of these men, their passion, their spirit, their dedication, their pride that they conveyed as members of the Philadelphia Eagles, it's why we're here today celebrating them and honoring them. So congratulations to both of you on your admission into the Philadelphia Eagles Hall of Fame.
Well, good evening, everyone, ladies and gentlemen. I want to tell you that I come to this building every day, as you well know, but it's all different today, and it has really put me in a sort of a surreal situation. I love the Philadelphia Eagles. I love people, and I love the people that I work with and the fans. I see the same name on the database almost year after year after year. What I don't know is that it's three different generations on there with the same name because I've been around so long. Franklin Field, the Veterans Stadium, and the beautiful Lincoln Financial Field, as I say in all the commercials, and the beautiful Lincoln Financial Field. You are very nice to come here for me. There are some people who have come quite a distance outside my family. One of the nice things about this place is that I get to know some of the players, and I call them players, but you see, that's wrong. That's an error. They're friends of mine. Who else would come from Utah, like Chad Lewis and his wife Michelle, come because he heard I was going to have this evening? I can't thank him and so many of you enough. I'm so happy to see them. I know you'll have some more questions for me later. I'm happy to see all of you, and I am very thankful. And I want to congratulate Troy and thank Jeffrey. It's wonderful being here.
Once again, I would like to congratulate Leo. I'm still a little bitter with there was two games he didn't get me the tickets, my ticket request. Leo, and I see Sue back there in the back, that there was a Giants game and a Cowboys game that still fell short. So, but once again, I'd like to give my honor to thank God for this opportunity. On behalf of my family, my wife and my children, my mother's here, Linda, God Mom's here. And I just wanted, this is one of the few opportunities where I have an opportunity to just say thank you. And thank you to the people who just made it fun to come to work every day at NovaCare. When we were over at the stadium, just the coworkers, the people that I saw every single day, it just made it a pleasant place to come work. And I just want to say thank you, because you made my 8 years of experience here, not just on the field, but inside the workplace, a wonderful place to play. And for you all as the media, when I came in here, it just brought back memories of getting in front of this podium and talking in times when I didn't want to talk, when no one else wanted to talk. But I learned. You held me accountable. You held my teammates accountable. And once again, I get a chance to say thank you. Thank you for allowing me to become a professional, both on and off the field, to answer the tough questions, the questions that others don't like to answer, but you have to, because it's part of our responsibility as athletes. So on behalf of my family, Jeffrey, I can't thank you enough for allowing me to come and spend 8 wonderful years here. Just a wonderful experience. Again, to the coworkers, for each and every last one of y'all, thank you. It was wonderful. You just made it pleasant and just a wonderful place to work. So with that being said, I know there'll be some questions for Leo and I, but again, I can't thank you enough. Thank you.
It's something brand new, and what I do is I attribute so much of it to a young lady back there named Kay Carlin, my wife, who has given me the 7 children. And I enjoy this place every day, and I enjoy going home every day. So my emotions being here today is just, it's just something that's a little bit surreal. There were people here because of me, and I'm still trying to digest that a little bit. So my emotions, I'm ecstatic about that one.
One of the reasons you're being inducted in the Hall of Fame, and Jeffrey touched on this, is your leadership. one of the criticisms of the team over the last couple of years has been a lack of leadership. You were a player that was brought here, and instantly you were a leader. What did you see in that locker room over your 8 years that helped you, I guess, grow into that? And what are the traits of a good leader in an NFL locker room?
Well, I think it just begins with, one, production. You have quiet leaders, you have vocal leaders, but if you don't produce, it's hard to lead in any locker room. And just looking from afar, again, I'm a Sunday morning couch coach, whatever you want to call me now, so I see it from afar, and I just see a lack of leadership. Sideline, when you see things happening on the sidelines, it's a want, it's a will, it's a desire. You have to hold each other accountable in the locker room. I'm not sure I'm not in there what's being said when you don't make a play. But I think plays on Sunday are a result of what you do on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And everyone being personally accountable is a shared responsibility amongst everyone in the locker room, coaches included. And leaders evolve. When I first came here, there was an individual named Willie T. Rhett Hall. These were veteran leaders that took me up underneath their wing and allowed me to lead. I had to play first and make plays, but I think those are some characteristics of production first, and then you just lead by an example.
Were you ever worried that coming home would present some pressures that would be difficult for you to succeed here?
That was one of the things that we thought about prior to me, you know, coming back here to Philly, the pressures of just playing and people asking and pulling on you, but I was brought here for a reason. It's to play ball and be the best player that I can be, both on and off the field. But we considered that, strongly considered that. But I was once one of those individuals that's out there that was booing. If I didn't like what I saw, I let people know it. But I knew this was a city that it's about production. It's not about potential. And when you get to this place, and I would say that to any free agent acquisition that's coming here, you have to take that in mind. If you don't produce, you're the highest paid player coming in, you will be held accountable. So that's something that I think each free agent acquisition should really take a look at long and hard, because if you can't balance the two, it'd be difficult to play here.
In the 90s, there were times when, you know, you had to make deals with the local TV stations to make sure there weren't blackouts. You don't have that problem anymore.
We haven't had that under this ownership. Okay.
Can you talk about how this team has evolved as a corporation and the sort of giant it has become, despite what's happened over the last, you know, 18 months or so?
Well, there's certain facts I can tell you. Look at these two magnificent edifices in which we matriculate every day. Pretty nice buildings compared to the past. The marketing department has increased tremendously. There are various people and various sections of the marketing department that I'm not familiar with. I have to go down and introduce myself a little bit. Compared to the days of the blackouts, yes, I used to have to negotiate the local telecast. I found it to be very interesting, and most times we were successful. By the same token, that doesn't even exist anymore. There is no such thing, and we have a fairly lengthy waiting list, which is another reason why I love the fans so very much. They're loyal, too. So I appreciate every one of them. As my wife and I kid around, she says, "You say hello to everybody." Yeah, I do. I kind of like people, so I like all the fans, too.
Troy, you've been here through good and bad. You came to a team that was pretty good, and at one point it was the worst team in the NFL by record, if not by performance. And then you've seen this team rise again, and now it's on a down trough. What is it like as a player? How do you endure what they're going through now, and how did you endure it in the late 90s?
Well, I was once there. You know, I think Ray Rose last year, I think we were 3-13. You knew there was going to be change, and then as a player, you have to embrace that change. You know, it's out of your control who's going to coach you next. You just take it upon, it's your responsibility to discuss those things with your teammate and embrace whoever that new individual is. It's not a good time. When you walk out there and before the kickoffs, your people booing, the bags are out. They knocked down my mailbox down in Lower Bucks County when we were living in Yardley. They must have vandalized my house, you know, every single day, till we had to put up a brick mailbox. But that's part of it. And once change was made, we won some football games. The city embraced us.
Was it like looking around the locker room knowing that these guys that you've been with for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years might not be there because of the product that's been put on the field?
Well, in some cases, I wanted some of the guys out of the locker room. As a player, you know who's there, who you can line up and fight with, and the coaches know. It's not a secret, and the fans, you identify them every week that you play. You want those guys removed. It's just not your responsibility, your role to do so. But you want those removed so you can get people in. I'll take a less talented individual and play with that someone's that's not going to make the mistakes, that's just going to line up, don't have to talk about hustling to the football, and do the little things right during the week to give us a chance to win on either Sunday, Monday, or Thursdays.
What distinguished the good teams you're on from the bad teams you're on?
I think I'm going to go back to locker room leadership. And let's please keep in mind, teams in the National Football League don't win because they're the most talented teams. Teams win on Sunday and Monday because the team wins because they make the least amount of mistakes. So you don't have to have a team full of superstars, high-priced free agents. You just got to get 47 guys that are willing to do what it takes during the offseason, coming together, don't have a bunch of prima donnas. It's not about who catches the most balls, who has the most interceptions. You hold each other accountable, and you line up on Sunday, the play is called, and you play.
Do you think it's possible when you see a team with so many new faces and a team that hasn't won a playoff game in 4 years, and they're something like 11-15 in their last 26, is it possible to have those leaders emerge when you haven't had that culture of winning for such a long time?
I think so. I mean, I think we did it here. It's just that you need new personalities. Again, you remove a few players, you plug in a few others, and you get the chemistry. But I believe so. And as a player, you know locker rooms are going to continue to evolve. That's part of our business. You line up who's on that roster that particular year, and you prepare, and then you let it go.
How did you lead, and how would you say players should lead? I mean, should there be some sort of, we talk about accountability, players getting in another player's face, giving the full effort?
Well, I think everyone leads differently. It started with, I would just say, I had to produce on the field first. Before I'm going to get in anybody's face, I'm not going to go to Doc's locker or Bobby or Al or whoever that may be and say, you need to be doing this if I'm not doing it. I remember having those conversations with Deuce and Donovan. We got to go. We need you to produce. We're going to get off the field on third down. We're going to cut the field in half. Every individual leads differently. But it takes someone has to stand up, and it's a shared responsibility.
One of those teams, would you, looking back, say was the best Eagles team you played with?
I thought the team that lost to Carolina here was that particular team, and maybe the team that lost to St. Louis that first championship game. There was something special about both of those units where we just had enough. We just didn't make the plays on that particular day.
Leo, was there a favorite team for you? Was there a team that you...
Sure, the one that got me hired, 1960. Okay. I still talk to Pete Retzlaff today, as a matter of fact. No, that had to be my favorite, and a lot of those guys are not here with us anymore, but a lot of those guys have remained friends of mine. So with all due respect to my buddy here, okay, I really had to think back on that, especially when they honored the 50-year anniversary a few years ago. I had a ball with them.
Those teams and how football has changed, you know, through the eras. When you sort of look around, can you believe it?
I sort of mentally analyze that myself, which doesn't exactly make me a scout. Okay, by the same token, I look at the talent that's there now, and I can dramatically see the difference. It is amazing what these kids can do on the field these days, whether it's throwing the ball, running, blocking, whatever. And can I analyze that stuff? No. But can I actually see a dramatic difference from years ago? By all means, especially in size, too. I once had a player say, well, you know, in those days, the pool of players weren't so bad, so that's why we were better. And I looked at him, and the current position player towers over him. But I didn't say anything because I liked the guy. Okay. So anyway, yes, 1960 is a fond memory.
Let's take one last question, please.
What were the season tickets, what did they cost when you first started?
Well, the most interesting season tickets I liked were the father and son deal. Now, they were, you know, Franklin Field's the shape of a horseshoe, and the two corner ones up here had discount tickets. So the father and the son would come, and one would be half price. okay? And quite often the father would be 32 and the son would be 28. So you kidding me, buddy? So we didn't have this, we didn't show IDs in those days, but anyway, that's what that's true story.
I didn't get that there. He cheated, so I guess he cheated everybody.
He's still mad at the Dallas Cowboy game.
Okay, if you guys need more questions with Troy, I'm sure they'll be on the side here. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you.